So I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this very interesting workshop. And this talk is based on three papers, basically. And all the papers are these guys. This guy is Greek, but all the others are Japanese. They are all scattered around the world now, so we are communicating through emails. And let me start with some brief introduction. So basically, what we are trying to do is to simulate, well, quantum black hole. What we mean by that is that, well, we like to understand microscopic description of black holes. And that, of course, requires some quantum gravity theory, but that is, we are going to base our studies on superstring theory. Now, the recent development is that we have this gauge string duality, so now we can study such an issue from the gauge theory point of view. And the difficulty is that this gauge theory is actually has to be strongly coupled in order to address this kind of issue. But strongly coupled gauge theory can be naturally studied by using Monte Carlo simulation, as you know very well from Lattice QCD studies. And this is the paper that did this for the first time. And now, let me, since there are some non-string theorists here, give you some brief explanation of the gauge gravity duality. This was proposed by Navasena more than 10 years ago. And the point is that superstring theory has open strings and closed strings. And the massless loss in the open string is our gauge particles. On the other hand, in the closed strings, we have quarks and electrons. And then string theory has this nice duality between open strings and closed strings. So for instance, you have, if you have this D-brains are the object that strings can have an end on. So for instance, this is an open string, it's propagating this way. But you can think of this diagram as a closed string emitted from the D-brain and disappears at some point. So this is the typical duality. And the point is that the same process can be viewed in two different ways. So that gives you the duality. Now, you need to have many a set of D-brains to think of a nice duality conjecture. And that gives you on the D-brain, on the open string side, and you have a P plus one dimensional U of N superjacobian theory, whereas on the gravity side, you have, well, closed string side, you have curved 10 dimensional space time. And the conjecture by Navasena is that these two theories are equivalent. And in particular, gauge gravity duality you're going to use, or actually confirmed, is the case with P equals zero. Namely, here I have D brain, but D brains can come in many dimensionality. And here I have one, the case with the P plus one dimensional, P plus one dimensional D brain, but so D brain is what we call. But the P equals zero case corresponds to having just one time direction, but no space directions. So this is the P equals zero case. In that case, you have n D0 brains on top of each other, and this is the time direction. And the open string degrees of freedom can be described by one dimensional U of n super symmetric gauge theory. And you also know what is the geometry these deep brains generate around it. And this is the so-called black zero brain solution in type 2A supergravity in 10 dimensions. And you can also think of this as a finite T temperature, and that corresponds to having a near exterior black hole on this gravity side. And this case theory has a coupling constant, which is called Wolf coupling. And in order to have a supergravity distortion valid on this gravity side, you need to send n to infinity first at fixed lambda, and then also you have to send lambda to infinity. So you need to take two limits in order to have a supergravity distortion valid. So what we basically do is to study this supersymmetric gauge theory. And since, once again, this coupling constant should be large in order to have supergravity on this side, you cannot do it by quadratic calculations. So we use Monte Carlo technique. And by doing that, we're going to show that our Monte Carlo data agrees nicely with the expected black hole sign from thermodynamics. In particular, we are going to show the energy temperature relation, which is predicted from purely gravitational calculations. In this way, with particular coefficient and particular power. And we also show that this is actually this is the leading behavior, but we can also consider alpha prime corrections to have a finite lambda without agreeing with the gravity. And then we also study Newton loop in gauge theory, which is a natural gauge invariant object in gauge theory. And the particular Newton loop we are interested in is this kind of object with this adjoint scalar on the exponent. So because of this term, it is different from Polyakov loop. But anyway, we calculate this quantity, and I'll explain you that this object can be calculated on the gravity side like this. So this object on the gauge theory, according to the gauge gravity duality, should encode the information of the geometry in the Schwarzschild equations. So this is a very nice result, which we would like to check explicitly by calculating this kind of quantity on the gauge theory side. And indeed, we find a very nice agreement. And by the way, since this x adjoint scalars is basically measuring the extent of the open strings inside the black hole, well, this kind of relationship with the Schwarzschild radius naturally implies that you have open strings extended all the way to the Schwarzschild, to the horizon. So in this sense, I think this result is compatible, consistent with the possible picture that we heard yesterday.
So your coupling constant has cancelled out from everything, is it? But where is G in this?
Well, this lambda is here.
Lambda.
Yeah. Coupling constant in this case has dimension
right.
of mass Q.
But when you show it as equal to the, when you have R Schwarzschild on the right hand side.
Yes.
So that also depends on lambda, right?
Yes, that's dependent.
Okay. So the lambda dependence came out exactly right.
Yes, that's right. I'll show you more.
The lambda dependence and the temperature dependence follow from essentially looking at the dimension in which, I should say, it follows from the dimension of the
yes.
Again, the pre-coefficients, this follows from and the one up here follow from, in one case, solving a minimal service? Or
yes, this one.
So that follows from solving a minimal service. And the other one from?
This one can be obtained by, well, just the geometry of this zero-brain solution.
Of the zero-brain solution, and then if you have alpha prime corrections, then there are additional terms that you would know about.
Yes, I'm going to talk about that.
I was just saying, it's not altogether trivial to get the lambda difference, right? Because this earlier work of Kabat-Lifshitz already didn't come out, right?
In that case, it's dimension 4, right? So if I have the graph of T.
Zero is dimension 4.
I'm sorry. In the
Look, Kabat and Lifshitz also had the same problem, V0 basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because and they did not get the lambda.
They were computing slightly different quantity. They didn't use the reciprocal. They got the end dependence, but not the lambda, something like that.
But if you get the lambda dependence wrong, then there must be some other dimensional.
So I'm not completely sure what exactly happened. I don't think they could get the exact. Or
they don't get
the
scale. Right.
They were just doing some extrapolation from the coupling, and they weren't really doing.
But this is so. This is in some sense like much stronger coupling.
They're calculating on a computer. I mean, they're actually.
They also did on a computer. Wasn't that also numerical?
That was an approximation. Gaussian approximation.
Okay.
It's basically
a coupling. Well, not quite. I mean, it is expected to work also at strong coupling. So I think the dependence on lambda should come out rather trivially also in their case.
But this is literally the BFSS matrix model action. I mean, that's
the form of the action is exactly the same as BFSS.
Okay.
But the larger limit in shift tape is different. Our case is kind of limit. BFSS different. Okay. So the plan of my talk is the following. I will first explain the model, and then review the graphic description and associated black holes and Millenak dynamics, and we explain how to calculate high-related corrections to the black holes and dynamics, and show that indeed these corrections can be seen from the K-series side. And then I move on to the structure papers, how it can be viewed from the K-series point of view, namely from the boson. Then summarize. Okay, so the model we study is basically this quantum mechanics of matrices with 16 supercharges. And he has this bosonic part and fermionic part. And this is basically one dimensional case theory. This is the time variable Euclidean time. And we have these fields, X and psi, bosons and fermions. We have 9 bosons and 16 fermions. And the boundary condition is periodic for boson and antiperiodic for fermions. No matrix theory finite temperature. And beta is the inverse temperature, and the lambda sitting here is the total coupling, which is related to the Young-Mills constant in this way. And as I said, total coupling has a dimension of mass Q. So the dimensionless effective coupling constant can be defined in this way. And basically, all the physics depends only on this combination. So without loss of generality, we can take lambda to 1 when we do simulation. And then low temperature corresponds to strongly coupled region, which is expected to have throughout gravity description. And the high temperature region corresponds to weak coupled regime. But there is one point I would like to make here. Namely, it is only the non-zero modes that becomes weakly coupled at high temperature. In fact, zero modes are still strongly coupled. So it is not that easy to do calculation at high temperature, but still we can do it by just integrating out these non-zero modes, productively at one loop, for instance, and then do Monte Carlo simulation with the remaining zero modes. That has been done in this paper. And we are going to compare the result we get here for the full model with this kind of temperature expansion. Okay. The method we are going to use to simulate this model is not actually lattice approach, but Fourier mode simulation. And the reason for this is that we would like to respect supersymmetry maximally. And it is known that lattice regularization breaks supersymmetry rather badly. So that's why we would like to do this. But of course, if you just naively put a power on the Fourier mode, gauge symmetry is broken. But in this one-dimensional gauge theory, you can actually fix the gauge symmetry first, non-parametrically. Using this static diagonal gauge, first for the gauge field. So you can gauge transform the gauge field to this form. static diagonal. It doesn't depend on D, and moreover, this diagonal. This does not fix the gauge completely, but there is actually a residual gauge theory, which is given this way. So this should be also fixed, but that can be done by imposing that these eigenvalues of the gauge field to be within this minimal interval. So these two procedures fix the gauge symmetry completely in this one-dimensional case. Let me remind you, this does not work in higher dimensions, so it only works in one dimension, but we can do it here. And after doing this gauge fixing, we are now allowed to put a Fourier mode cutoff on the fields. In fact, after we presented our result, these two Englishmen wrote a paper and about the Monte Carlo simulation of the same model, but using lattice regularization. And well, I would say that the quality of the data here is not as good as ours, but they claim that they are consistent with ours. And also, I would also mention that there is very nice work by Kabat, Lipschitz, and Loeb about the same model, but with different approach, namely, as I said, Gaussian approximation. And this is a rather crude approximation, but still, they were able to obtain the energy, for instance, from the AC, which has the power law behavior with the right power, but with the coefficient, which is something different from the gauge gravity prediction, different by a factor of two or something. So, of course, this rather old work encouraged us a lot to do this approximation. Yes, and then let me move on to the gravity description of this gauge theory and explain how you can get dynamics. Now, so the dual gravity description, after taking the decoupling limit, which you need to have this conjecture for the duality, is given by essentially by this metric. This you can get from zero plane Bernstein solution of type 2A supergravity. This U here is a rescaled radial coordinate, and lambda on the gravity side, this is of course soft coupling on the gauge theory side, corresponds to this combination of the parameters. String theory. And the function F is given this way, so you have a horizon at U equals zero. And of course, U equals zero, U equals U zero. And U zero represent the non-extremality of this black hole. And that corresponds to the temperature in this way. And since you're given this metric, you can calculate the Bekenstein Hawking entropy in the usual way, and you get this result. Now, eliminating U0, you can obtain entropy temperature relationship. And then from that, using usual sum of equation, you get the internal energy temperature relation. This is presents the formula I have shown you already. So you get this particular power 2.8 and particular coefficient 7.41, which you have to reproduce from the gauge theory side according to the gauge gravity.
Okay. In your metric, what is the D0?
This is just a numerical constant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's so just.
Can I just ask a very general right question?
Yes.
In this case, is there any boundary that's related? I mean, in the usual CFT, you think of the gauge theory living at a boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same here?
Yes.
But the boundary is one dimensional in this case? You said you're, because you said it's just a one-dimensional gauge thing. So what's the geometry in the bulk that makes the boundary one-dimensional?
Yes, it is.
So why is it?
But that all the chances is SA direction. Yeah, as you see here, this is the S8 radial.
Right, so I'm just confused about that.
Yes.
I thought you were just studying one dimensional.
Yes, yes, that's right.
So what happens to the S8? It
shrinks.
Yeah, because
but it's playing the role of the S, like in ADS5, cross S5, that's playing the role of the S5.
Oh, that's the S5.
Yes. And the DT is the direction, the flip of the gauge theory direction.
So this is a solution in a 10-dimension type 2A supergravity. So it should have, well, all the dimensions. So this is basically the SA part.
So is that not going to infinity the radius of that?
Going the other way, actually.
Oh,
it's
starting to. Oh, I see. So it's shrinking down instead of blowing up.
Yes, so this is not an ADS process situation. That's only.
No, I understood it wasn't, so I'm trying to understand what it
is. Still, I think we're understanding the inverse case of the subdivision.
So now let me show you the results from the gauge theory. Here I plot internal energy, and this is the temperature. And let me remind you that we have set lambda to 1, according to our convention. And the high temperature regime corresponds to weak cutting, and low temperature corresponds to strong cutting. At high temperature, we can have this high temperature expansion, including one loop corrections for the non-thermal. And this dashed line would represent that result. So as you see, our Monte Carlo data from full model agrees very well with this high temperature expansion, but they start to deviate around this temperature to or something. And then here is this curve that we present the leading result from the graph. So you see that our model data are approaching this curve, but well, of course, it's not clear yet. I mean, and this is actually our first result, but then I will show you more in detail what is going on here. And to do that, we need to include actually the sub-leading corrections, alpha prime corrections.
The gravity model is going to be valid in a certain regime on the other
yes.
On the other transparency you have.
Yes.
The range. Well,
yes. That's
can you remind us what that was?
Yes. Basically in our convention, P much less than 1. Yes. And on the right left hand side, it should be much larger than 1/n to some power. But since we are taking larger limit, this right hand side.
But wouldn't there an upper bound and a lower bound? Is the lower bound not going to be relevant in the discussion?
Lower bound is irrelevant because we take a planar margin.
Okay.
Of course, in actually, in multiple simulation, we take n equals 12 or 14. So, in principle, if you go to a very low temperature, you have to increase n. Because of that.
And what is it that you actually computed here? What is this E?
This E is nothing but the temperature derivative of the free energy. So since you're given an option for the gauge theory, you can just derive this quantity. You can just calculate it from as an expectation value of some observable in this case.
So it's just the mean total energy of the
yes.
This gauge at that temperature?
Yes. So we also calculated particle flying, which is not the Wilson loop, but just the ordinary particle flying, to see the phase structure of this model. And once again, these are data points, and it agrees nice. nicely with high temperature expansion, high temperature, and then at low temperature, unfortunately, we don't have any gravity prediction. So here we just make a fit to this characteristic behavior of the confined phase, namely of this form. And you see that this form fits nicely with these data points.
What's the other dotted line? That's
this
one. The one on the left dotted line is a fit, and the right dotted line is a gravity prediction?
No, no. There is no gravity prediction for this observable. But this is just a high temperature expansion. And this is just a fit to this form, which is characteristic to the confined phase.
So why is the deconfined phase at low temperature?
Well, the point is that, for instance, if you don't have supersymmetry, if you consider bosonic model, then there is a phase transition to the confined phase at low temperature. That's what we were saying. And the point is that in the supersymmetric case, this phase transition disappears, and the confined phase just seems to continue to zero temperature. There's only one phase in the supersymmetric model. And in fact, this phase structure is consistent with gravity analysis on the gravity side.
If you have a 0 plus 1 dimensional theory, what does confinement mean? Like, normally think of confinement as
saturation. What I mean by that is just this kind of behavior of the bottom of line. I mean, of course, there's no meaning for confinement. What I mean is just that, well, spontaneous breakdown of the centers. Okay, so let me discuss
even spontaneous breakdowns. Even spontaneous breakdowns.
Well, if you have
a
large
system, it's still makes sense.
Yeah.
I think
Okay, so only in the larger end you get this makes sense. Okay, so let me discuss more in detail the agreement with the gravity results by including a correction. So in order to do that, we need to consider alpha prime corrections, which have the further action. Of course, it is well known that these kind of corrections can be obtained by calculating three levels, scattering amplitudes of the massless modes in string theory. And of course, the leading term it gives is add to the supergravity action. And an explicit calculation of 2-point and 3-point amplitude shows that, in fact, there is no corrections to this action at order 1 in alpha prime linear and order. But now, calculation of 4-point amplitude shows that there is actually non-zero corrections at alpha prime Q order, and there's one, well, some terms are known. But unfortunately, a complete form of this alpha prime Q corrections is yet to be determined. But since this is non-zero, we can still make a dimensional analysis what this kind of corrections corresponds to on the Gauss theory side. So the point is, what does alpha prime correction actually corresponds to on the Gauss theory side? And the thing to recall is that the curvature radius of the dual geometry, namely rho, is related to alpha prime and U0 this way. So in fact, we can make a dimensionless quantity from alpha prime and rho this way. So in fact, alpha prime expansion is it is an expansion with respect to this ratio. And if you look at this, this is nothing but t to the power of 3 fifths. And if you recall the temperature, well, U0 is related in this way, you can get this. So the fact that you have upper bound cube corrections translates to this corrections on the internal energy. Namely, you have this cube. So that gives you 9 pips. And in fact, in this paper, we made more careful treatment, but it leads to the same conclusion with this very simple-minded dimensional analysis. And in our convention, we set lambda to 1, so that means you have this kind of prediction from the gravity side. So now we'd like to compare our data to this additional bracket.
Can we go back to the top there?
Yes.
This is the curvature radius that I find in that full 10-dimensional metric,
mm-hmm.
but it's evaluated at the horizon.
At the horizon, yes.
It actually grows as I go out from the horizon, doesn't it?
It's the other way.
Don't I expect that at u equals infinity, the curvature blows up?
If the eighth-dimensional sphere is shrinking down,
well, if you go to larger u, this becomes smaller and our radius becomes this becomes smaller, so radius becomes smaller.
No, I think I think what we're saying is the radius. We expect the curvature, the radius of curvature, or curvatures in that 10-dimensional geometry are actually growing.
Well,
the large cube.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. So the radius of curvature is getting smaller.
Yeah.
Meaning the curvature
is getting
larger.
Okay. But in your more careful argument, you're arguing that it's the curvature at the horizon.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
can you
right.
say a few words why
that is?
Yeah.
So what we have done is to write down the classical equation of motion with this additional term in the action, and then we discussed what is the possible solution to this classical equation of motion. We cannot solve it, but we can make an ansatz and see how the solution looks like. And then we have to calculate the. Entropy is a Bohr formula. Then, that way you can get.
So you're specifically looking at the known curvature of the fourth term.
Yeah.
Just as a test case and see how that affects me.
Yes, basically that's what we have.
Your full space term is asymptotically flat or asymptotically ADS or asymptotically singular?
In your horizon geometry is asymptotically ADS. To process state, but we build up on fields.
But finally, at infinity, it goes to flat space if you go really far away?
Yes.
No, you're working in the throat.
Yeah, we take the near horizon.
Yeah.
You don't understand the entire system. Is it just D0 brings placed? In flat space, and you can go and look close by if you want, but isn't that the system? It's just heated D0 brains case something. Is that right?
Far away, the dilaton is still running off. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
here.
And the sphere is.
So this is not just putting some D0, making a bouncer of D0 brains, heating it up, and then zooming in to just look at the near horizon limit. I thought that's one way to see what. This could be, but maybe I'm wrong.
You weren't zooming in, but the dilaton never stabilizes.
No, that's fine. It doesn't stabilize, but in the entire, it can still be embedded in a more complete picture, which is asymptotically flat, or I can't do that.
That's not contained in
here. It's not contained here because it's chopped off.
Yes.
But if the metric was becoming, having higher and higher curvature towards the, as you go away, I was just wondering, does it actually go to infinite curvature at some point, or really when I put in the full power, but just.
Oh, I see, yeah.
If it actually became singular somewhere at larger radii,
in the full D0 range geometry.
Yeah, that's right. The full D0 range geometry, its curvature is low at infinity, like zero, then it may start to increase for a while, but then the horizon comes down again. You see? That's okay.
But I think what you're saying is it has a UV completion, which is some string theory, because quantum mechanics, I mean, the point is that the gravity description breaks down with large radius or at high temperature. And so he was showing us this, you know, made a transition to this other, just the quantum mechanical problem, where they did the high temperature.
So let me see if I understand. Is this the same problem that is putting some D0 train in the middle of asymptotically flat space and heating them up and trying to describe their physics, or it's not that part of the problem?
I would say no, because you're not doing string theory anymore.
You've taken a limit. You could start with that situation and then you
scale down.
What is the limit?
You scale down.
You scale. Yeah, you sort of do some double scaling type thing where you look at modes that are confined to this region, and at the same time, are we taking alpha prime to zero? Essentially,
you take the temperature much smaller than 1/√α, and then you basically take the temperature much smaller than 1/√α.
But that's, we consider for ADS space also. The way we get ADS 3, we start with some D3 bay in the middle of the stroke. Maybe it's just language. I just put D3 bay in flat space. If I zoom in close by, it looks like ADS might forget the flat space. But really, it's all there if I keep on.
But you would formally take a limit where flat space part has been decoupled. And then you've thrown away some certain degrees of freedom on the brains itself. And those two things
are equivalent. So you've thrown away, I mean, the D0 brains, you had a whole string theory there, but you've thrown away all the string excitation. And that's what's left over is the quantum mechanics.
Okay, no, I think I will follow that. Okay, so we obtained more results than the previous ones in 1 year, actually. And then these are the data points that we obtained. Here we plot the difference from the leading gravity predictions in the long log scale against temperature. And we tried to see whether this agrees with this power we obtained from the gravity of that prediction. And indeed, we find that this total shows nice power of figure here with this expected power 4.6. And we see some deviation for here, but these are understood as a finite cutoff effect because these circles are obtained with a cutoff 6. So as we increase lambda to 8, we obtain the results also to this state line. So now, from this fit to the power behavior, we obtain the constant, this coefficient C, as 5.28. Now, here we plot the same data linear scale and we find, well, this is the leading behavior, just this guy. But with this C, x to 5.28, we obtain this nice agreement with the power data.
Small. 4.6 is actually equal to 23/5.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so we'll see how this
happens. That's amazing. I thought that was so fun. I thought there was just like some best fit.
Yeah, of course, there is some fitting error, but this is very tiny.
So was that just some, is that actually like the best fit still?
Yes. I mean, that's it. This one is a. This is not the best thing.
Okay. You drew 4.6 and then you saw visually that it comes pretty close.
Yeah, that's what we showed here, but you also see we find that the country
the chi
squared. Yeah. 4.6 something, but there's
a nice plot of this.
So in the plot on the right.
Hang on. Okay.
In the plot on the right, ignoring the higher derivative corrections for a minute, why don't all your plots stop right when the data is starting to intersect? I mean, if you have two curves that intersect, that's not really a match. That's just two curves intersecting. So,
this curve and this curve.
I mean, the data points.
The data points.
Right when they start to agree, the data points stop. So, to really get an agreement, you would need at least two data points showing up on the curve. So why not go to 0.4?
Yeah. Yeah, if we did this simulation at 0.4, we expect the whole thing results here.
But you're saying it's computationally too difficult.
Yeah, that's why they've got to perfect
length
already.
Yeah, I mean, you have to increase lambda as you go to lower temperature, as one of the as you lower the temperature, you need more and more.
You're saying it's hard or it's impossible? Because it seems like one nice point at 0.4 would be more valuable in checking this than 20 points to the...
Well, it is hard, I would say. I mean, you may be able to do it.
So this is like on a supercomputer cluster that takes
very
long time.
We need supercomputer to train these points.
Just as a parenthetical note, you can do the bulk calculation taking finite cutoff effects into account as well.
Bulk?
Yes.
Yes.
You can probably do what you said, but they don't know how to get, they don't know how to calculate C.
Well, then, but you could, you just need to calculate it in some correct geometry.
For which you would need the full hash.
Yeah.
They don't have.
No, not finite alpha prime effects, finite cutoff effects, finite lattice spacing.
But I guess I'm not sure what you're suggesting.
There's a bulk geometry that corresponds to the matrix quantum mechanics with a finite. Not the full quantum mechanics, but the quantum mechanics will find the cutoff. That's just a side.
Yeah, I didn't know that word.
Yeah. I can
please
tell you. Okay.
So, as you see, we really have to improve this alpha prime productions to see agreement with the Monte Carlo data. All this gap is filled by this stuff. Now, let me turn to this Wilson loop calculation. And so the Wilson loop on the gate, well, gate series I agree with this guy. And now, let me first review the calculation on the gravity side of this quantity. And to do that, on top of this n Gleaser brains that creates the geometry, we introduce this broad Gleaser brain, far away from the n Gleaser brains here. And then, since Gleaser brains are the object that strings can have an end on, we can consider a fundamental string having two ends on this user brain and this user brain, and consider a process that this fundamental string propagates in its time direction class in one. And this process can be viewed on the gate theory side as this reason loop. Suppose you consider this program separated in the ninth direction, we have this ninth component of the chain scalar on top of this gauge field. Because these are the fields that couples to the string on the brain. And now, if you view this process on the gravity side, you replace this n Gleaser brains by the geometry that they create, namely this geometry, and consider the amplitude, string amplitude of this propagation. And that is given by the non-Bode option, which is given by a minimal surface with this boundary. But in this one mesh of in the present case, this calculation is rather trivial. It's just product of beta. This is imaginary time direction extent. And this basically in infinity, which is the deeper cutoff, and user optimizes this distance comes in here. Just this product. So so the result is that this Wilson loop on the gaussian side should be related to this string amplitude given by this normal surface. And in fact, you have additional factor here, which represent permanent and loss suppression factor due to propagation of a particle with heavy mass, which is the test, mass of the test particle we're thinking of. And again, this string, this action is given by this with a minimal surface. So taking the log of this equation, you get this relation. And as you see here, it is natural to identify this permit a loss suppression with this infrared cutoff. You just cancel these two, and you obtain this equals to this. In fact, this identification can be justified in a more sophisticated way using this T-dual by two cutoffs. So you get this prediction from the gravity side. And in fact, U0 is related to Schwarzschild shield radius, this way. So since you know the geometry, you obtain explicit result for the Wilson loop. And again, this is a power law with some power, minus 0.6 with this question. Now we calculate this on the gate theory side. This is the result. So in fact, we have to go to very low temperature. This is actually 0.1. Let's see. Here we plot Wilson loop, local Wilson loop against temperature with this minus 0.6, expecting this kind of power behavior. So in fact, these points correspond to, for instance, temperature of 0.1, which is much lower than the temperature regime that we consider for the energy. So because of that, we cannot do very large n for these points. So we only do n equals 4, 6, 8. And so these circles are n equals 4. These diamonds are 6. These squares are 8. And as you see, well, let me remind you that this is a negative power. So lower temperature corresponds to right, to the right. And as you go to lower temperature, you see very nice straight line behavior, power of behavior that corresponds to this one. And more importantly, the slope of this straight line is very precise on 1.89, which is predicted on the graph size. So, and of course, this is n equals 4. We have to take the larger limit eventually, but n equals 6 and 8 are almost on top of each other. So, we expect that you're already seeing the Galoisian behavior. It seems that, yes, this power and this coefficient has very little finite end effect for our data. However, let me point out that this straight line does not go through the origin. That means that it is not just this term, but we have a constant shift. And that is obtained from the fit as minus 4.58. And that is actually, that can be also understood as a alpha prime correction, but yes. So in the case of energy, we had alpha prime to the alpha prime cube corrections. So that's why we get t to the 9 feet. However, in this case, we have to think of fluctuation of the world sheet. That gives you actually alpha prime linear corrections that corresponds to t speed to be three fifths. And then it cancels this factor, and then that gives you this constant. And it is also possible in principle to have log t kind of practice, but log t and constant are rather difficult to distinguish linearly. So basically, this term, constant shift, can be understood.
Could that have come from your infrared cutoff? I mean, you can answer those two.
Yes.
Yeah, there.
Well, that's not abstract too, because, well, yeah, the temperature dependence is different. Our data, well, kind of supports this kind of argument.
So, 4.58 is something where you justify the scaling analytically, or you actually calculate the first correction?
No, okay. We didn't calculate anything like that. I just did a fit to this stage. But, well, I think it is possible to calculate this.
It should be.
Yeah, so we are discussing how it can be. So we just Gaussian fluctuation of the worst. So let me summarize. So what we have presented is the Monte Carlo studies of a supersymmetric margin case theory. And I hope I convinced you that this Monte Carlo simulation is a powerful method to study string theory.
Okay, let me again. So typically, what size of n did you reach? What's the maximum n you did in these things?
N.
Yeah.
Okay, it depends on the quantity. Actually, in this case here, these are very small.
Yeah.
And we are, in some sense, we are very lucky because we were, this power and the coefficient seems to have little finite expressions. But in the case of energy, we need to have a lot, much larger n.
What n did you use there? I just forgot.
What n did you
use? Just a rough order, I don't need
to. 17 or something. Yeah, for instance, in this case, we use 17. And, well, physically what we have done is to simulate supersync inside a black hole based on gauge string duality. And we have looked at black holes and dynamics, namely the energy temperature relation, and studied Wilson loop. And we have shown that this quantity is really related to the Schwarzschild radius. So, this quantity really encodes the information of the geometry that this case theory describes. And our result is highly non-trivial check of the duality, including higher derivative corrections. And it also explains the microscope origin. Let me just briefly comment on what we are trying to do, which is somehow related to what I talked about just today. There are some proposals or conjectures for non-particle formation of supersync M theory. The first one is matrix theory. Authors, and there are others. And interestingly, all of these proposals are gauge theories, which can be obtained from dimensionally reducing 10-dimensional n plus 1 square dynamic theory. So they are all kind of related to each other. So the hope is that is to study these gauge theories using our Monte Carlo technique from first principles in a strongly coupled regime. And we need to take the larger limit, which is, of course, not so easy, but still quite easy. So for instance, technically this second model is most the easiest one, but it's just a zero dimension model. These are just matrices and space-time harmony. So one thing you can try to address is whether the SO10 symmetry of this model, which is manifest in this function, can be spontaneously broken down to just four. And so what the physics that is kind of known describe is the dynamical generation of the four dimensional space time, because it's x mu that represents the space time as a dynamical object, as an eigenvalue distribution. So if we find that the eigenvalue distribution of these 10 position matrices collapses to this kind of four dimensional hypersurface, it suggests that this happens and we obtain four dimensional space time. And some time ago, we did a Gaussian expansion method, which is basically what Kabat-Lipschitz and Rho has done for the one-dimensional theory, studied black holes and magnets, and obtained some results suggesting that we need this kind of pattern. So now we are trying to see whether Monte Carlo gives the same information.